Church. Pastor.
Hello, Ethan. How are you doing?
Pretty good.
Ethan, have we ever said on this podcast the fact that you're a member of Christ Reformed?
I don't know, but I am. I'm a member of Christ Reformed Baptist Church.
Yeah.
For a long time I've been a member, actually. Since almost
That's
the
right.
beginning, I think. It's been an honor. It's been a privilege to sit under your preaching and teaching. It's been great.
Well, it's been great to have you in the church. And I think it's been about like 5 years at least, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's been at
church.
Least, yeah, for sure. It's been great. It's been traded for anything.
Yeah.
But yep, that's right. And this is episode 5 of the podcast. It's actually, to be honest with you, it's been a really long time since weeks, really. I mean, I think it's really the first one we've done since the holidays, I think, right? Would that be accurate?
I can't remember when the last one was.
Yeah, which is a bad sign.
But we're both busy, but anyway, and all that we've ever said, I mean, just for anybody who might listen in, you're at your house, I'm at my house in North Garden, so we're Skyping together, and today's what, February 9, and it's New Hampshire primary night.
Yes, it is. I hear that Trump is leading, and Bernie Sanders on the Democrat side, I hear.
Yeah, I just pulled up. I pulled it up on my phone, and right now, what is it? It's 5 minutes till 9 p.m. on Eastern Standard Time. So the polls have been closed for an hour, but it looks like Sanders is 23% reporting. So it's like a nearly a 60-40 split. I don't know if that'll narrow on the Democratic side. On the Republican side, it looked like Kasich was doing a little bit better.
Yeah, it's strange.
The Republican
side really seemed to flip-flop or go a completely different direction this time, which is weird. But I guess a whole different state, so I mean, I guess that makes sense to a certain degree.
Yeah, so. Just looking at it right now at 5 minutes till 9, 22% precincts. Trump's at 34%, Kasich 15, Cruz and Bush are neck and neck.
Yeah, that's
and
funny.
Rubio's not behind.
I mean,
for third
in Iowa, like Jeb Bush did, like really, he did really bad. I mean, really bad. So it's strange that he's now neck and neck with the winner of the Iowa. Once that's
who do you like? Are you willing to say who you like?
Well, I mean, I'm not willing to say who I like, and not really because it's like a tough topic for the podcast, but just because like I'm not really good at politics, and I don't really know much about the candidates at all, really. So for me to endorse one would be like it wouldn't really mean anything because I don't know anything about them. I mean, I know just from the things I've heard and seen Donald Trump say and do. I'm not fond of him very much at all. So I'd much rather have another candidate other than Trump. But like as far as like the front runners in the Republican race, like Cruz and Marco Rubio and Ben Carson, like I don't really know anything about them, so it's hard for me to endorse them one way or the other. Cruz has a really terrifying face, though. I know that every time I see him,
you're terrified by his face.
He has a very strange, like almost like non-human face. It's very weird. I don't know. I'm sure he's a nice guy, though. I'm sure he's a nice guy. Seems like a nice guy.
Well, he's supposedly a more evangelical Christian type, although it comes from a charismatic background.
Oh, really?
But anyway, his father is a pastor. For people who are outside of our church who might listen to this, well that every Sunday we won't mention their names, but we've got a couple of young men in the church who are interested in politics. And they really follow it closely, and they know a lot about it. I mean, they really are experts. They know a whole lot more about it than I ever would think about. And I always am curious to hear their opinions when we get together on Sundays over lunch.
Yeah,
you know the funny thing was, I knew I was in a Reformed Baptist church last Sunday. I said this on the way home. I said this to Llewellyn. We had the morning service. We had lunch. We had the afternoon service, and we're driving home. And I told Llewellyn, I said, "I know we're a Reformed Baptist church because not a single person said anything to me about the Super Bowl. Not a stink
really
about it. You know, nobody said a word. I don't know if you did. Somebody did you talk to somebody over lunch?
Actually,
or?
I did.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I did. Okay. Actually, that me and your kids. We talked about it. I mean, but it wasn't like there was this huge interest in it. It was just very, you know, play on tray. You know, who do you want to win? You know, sort of thing. So. Oh, let me grab my Trump. Wow, I can't believe I just said that. I don't know if you heard that, but I almost said, I wanted to say, let me grab my pool commentary, and for some reason I said, let me grab my Trump commentary. I'm not so sure. I'm not so sure about how good a commentary that would be.
I don't think that would be a very good commentary. It's probably one that his mom gave him.
Yeah.
You know, it's got his name on it. He's never even opened it.
Probably, something like that.
That's what good care he's taken of it.
Yeah.
If all only right. He had a pool commentary, huh?
Yeah, I'm sure that'd be helpful. Anyway, the segue back in. Yeah, I mean, I did talk to a couple fellows about the Super Bowl on Sunday, and your kids as well. And I also talked to a few people about it, but it wasn't. I mean, you're right in that it wasn't really a big topic of concern. You know, it was very. It wasn't a big deal. You know, not many people really cared. In fact,
we were talking about on the way home from church in the car with the kids. I'm saying kids when you know two of mine. They're still in the household or, you know, college age. But anyway, we were talking about, you know, whether the Super Bowl has been hyped as much as in years past. And, you know, I was saying, I just think it's part of the, you know, the changing media landscape. You know, it used to be, you know, I remember the days when, you know, like your parents, that there were, you know, there were three major networks and, you know, the Super Bowl, you know, I guess as much as anything, still is a kind of a national thing where people watch it or even they know about the commercials. But I mean, even now, the commercials are now out on YouTube.
Right.
So they're not, it's not really, doesn't have, I mean, you know, people can also, they can record the game, they can TiVo it, whatever. And so, anyways, it's changed maybe a little bit. You know, as far as it being something that, and you remember when, I don't think this happens anymore either. You know, churches used to have Super Bowl parties, you know.
Oh, really?
Come out, we're going to cancel our Sunday evening service, and everybody come out, we're going to watch the Super Bowl together, you know.
Dang.
I don't think churches do that anymore. I mean, that's kind of passe. That would be kind of, you know, it used to be cutting edge in these broad.
It feels kind of sacrilegious, churches. To be honest.
Do what?
Feels kind of sacrilegious, to be honest. I mean,
I'm not promoting it.
Yeah.
I think it was an abysmal thing to do, but yeah. I don't even think the, you know, secret sensitive type churches do that anymore. Mm-hmm. You know,
I didn't even watch it. I actually, it's funny. I usually watch it. And my family usually goes over to another good Christian family that we know. They usually go to their house and have snacks and watch Super Bowl. And I usually go with them to that, but I didn't go this year. There was a game that I was playing that I really wanted to. I was almost finished with, and I wanted to finish it before the weekend ended. So I decided just to opt out. So I didn't even watch it, honestly. But I mean, I was glad the Broncos won because I like the Broncos. Number one, because I kind of like Peyton Manning. I think he's a nice, humble guy. And number two, right. I like the fact that they kicked the Patriots out of the series, which I hate very much. So I'm glad that they kicked them out. So I was pulling for the Broncos. So I was glad they won. So you know, it was good.
All right, brother.
Yeah.
On to Bible apologetics.
All right, from football to apologetics. All right, so let's see here. So this is episode 5, and we're going to look at a contradiction, an apparent contradiction that deals with a fellow named Abijam. Is that how you pronounce it? Is that how you would say it?
That's right, Abijam.
Abijam's mother. Who was Abijam's mother? Is the question being asked here? And it comes.
I hesitated on that because you know in the First Kings passage, he's called Abijam or Abiyam. I guess you could pronounce the J with a Y sound.
Right.
But in the Second Chronicles parallel, he's called Abijah.
Right.
So you might, I mean, that's not one of the issues that the Skeptics Annotated Bible picked up on.
Right.
Clearly, it's the same person called by two different names, the person who succeeded Rehoboam as king over the southern kingdom of Judah.
Right. And is Rehoboam, let's read the verses first. Let's get the context going
listening.
So go ahead. No, it's fine. The verses that are in question are the first passage is 1 Kings 15, 1 through 2, which in the KJV says, "Now in the 18th year of King Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, reigned Abijam over Judah. 3 years reigned he in Jerusalem, and his mother's name was Maacah, the daughter of Abishalom." And then in 2 Chronicles 13, 1 through 2, later in the Bible, it says, "Now in the 18th year of King Jeroboam began Abijah to reign over Judah. He reigned 3 years in Jerusalem. His mother's name also was Micaiah, the daughter of Uriel of Gibeah." And there was a war between Abijah and Jeroboam. Now, first thing, and obviously the question here is who is the mother of Abijam or Abijah? Because in the First Kings it says his mother's name was Maacah, the daughter of Abishalom, and in the Second Chronicles passage it says that his mother's name was Micaiah, the daughter of Uriel of Gibeah. And one thing just to clarify something, you said that he succeeded Rehoboam. Are Jeroboam and Rehoboam the same people? Are those two separate names, two different names for the same person? Just to clarify.
No. In the, First Kings, First and Second Kings are telling the story of the monarchy in Israel. And, of course, there's a so-called united monarchy that exists under the first king, Saul, the second king, David, and the third king, Solomon. Under whom the temple in Jerusalem is built. And then when Solomon dies, his son is Rehoboam. He succeeds his father as king, but there's a civil war that breaks out, and Jeroboam leads the 10 northern tribes in a rebellion against Rehoboam. And Rehoboam is in Jerusalem, and he's the titular head of the tribe of Judah, where he's a Davidite. He's a descendant of David. And Benjamin sides with Judah, and then the other 10 tribes are arrayed against the southern kingdom. And this is the beginning of what we call the divided kingdom. And so from this point on, there are two kingdoms. There's the northern kingdom that's called Israel, and the southern kingdom that's called Judah. And the capital eventually of the northern kingdom under a later king named Omri is established at Samaria. And then the southern kingdom, which is typically called Judah, their capital is Jerusalem. And so that it exists like that as a divided kingdom until much later on the northern kingdom falls in 721 BC to the Assyrians, and they're destroyed, wiped off the map, except that the Assyrians send in some persons from their empire who settle in the area around Samaria and intermarry with the Israelites, and that's the root of the Samaritan people group that are there that are so odious to the Jews in the time of Jesus. And then in the southern kingdom, they hang on a few more years. But in 586 BC, they're destroyed by the Babylonians. And the temple is destroyed, Jerusalem is sacked, and they're carried off to Babylon. This is the setting for the book of Daniel, the book of Ezekiel, and so forth. Right. So this is, hundreds of years before then. This is when this is the very beginning of the divided kingdom. So Solomon dies, and the kingdom is divided between Jeroboam in the north and Rehoboam in the south. Then now we're getting the account of what happened in the southern kingdom after Rehoboam died. Then he is succeeded by, First Kings calls him Abijam, and as Second Chronicles calls him Abijah. So, like, if you look at First Kings 14, verse 31, the verse right before 1 Kings 15. And it says, and Rehoboam slept with his fathers and was buried with his fathers in the city of David. And his mother's name was Naamah, an Ammonitess. And Abijam, his son, reigned in his stead. So this is a political, a royal succession narrative. You know, Rehoboam dies, and Abijam, his son, you know, succeeds him. You have the same thing in 2 Chronicles. If you look at 2 Chronicles 12:16, and Rehoboam slept with his fathers and was buried in the city of David, and Abijah, his son, reigned in his stead.
Right.
So anyway, that's it.
Okay. All right. So there's your historical setting, which I would have never been able to provide. So I'm glad you're here. But so there you have it, and that's the setup. And so, but the question at hand isn't the historical setting, which is very very stable and solid. It's this woman. Who is this? Who is the mother of Abijah? And basically, you know, one of the things that strikes me is a little bit flaky about this. Most of these contradictions are flaky. Some of them more than others. And one thing that strikes me particularly, you know, kind of pretentious and a little bit silly about this one is from the get-go. You know, obviously, they didn't have a problem with the difference in names of Abijam and Abijah. Obviously, you know, they were able to realize that, you know, those that's the same person. Abijam and Abijah are obviously the same person. You know. However, they do seem to latch on to Makkah and Micaiah, which
right.
which also seem to me extremely similar. You know, it's not as if, you know, and his mother's name was Makkah, and the next passage his mother's name was, you know, Sharon or something like that. But one thing that I will say that gives a little bit more credence and that it's a little bit more confusing isn't necessarily the difference between Makkah and Micaiah, but rather how one passage, the 1 Kings one, says that says his mother's name was Makkah, the daughter of Abishalom. And then in the next passage, it says that her name was Micaiah, the daughter of not Abishalom, but yet Uriel of Gibeah. So that to me, that's probably the bigger quote-unquote problem here, more so than the name. The research that I was able to do, one thing that I found, and I looked, is that the I'm going blank here. The Brown Driver Briggs lexicon, and I found that the the word for daughter here is bot. Is that how it's pronounced? Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Bot.
Bot, which means first and foremost daughter. Apparently, it's mostly used. You know, like if I were to be married and had a child, a female child, I would call her my daughter. You know, she's my blood daughter. It seems like that's the way bot is used mostly. However, it does say in subscript G that it can be used in certain circumstances for granddaughter sometimes.
Right.
So that is a possible translation. So given that, some people seem to think this fellow who I'm reading here, who remains anonymous, he didn't seem to give his name, but he is talking about this passage, and he says it seems that Abishalom's daughter Tamar married Uriel of Gibeah and gave birth to Makkah. It says whether you call her the daughter of Absalom or the daughter of Uriel depends on whether you intend to focus on her as father or grandfather. So he seems to think that one passage, namely the let me go back here to the Bible, namely the. The first passage in 1 Kings, his mother's name was Makkah, the daughter of Abishalom. He seems to think that in the second passage is referring to the granddaughter and not the daughter. Mm-hmm. And that bot is being used in one passage referring to a daughter and then the next passage being referred to a granddaughter. That's one possible way that I've seen people explain it. It also, this fellow, Wolfgang Schneider is his name, also, he makes the note that it says Abijam's mother is once called the daughter of Abishalom and once called the daughter of Uriel of Gibeah. And he says, according to Josephus, which Poole also references, we'll get to that later, according to Josephus, this Uriel was the husband of Abishalom's daughter, Tamar. And Tamar was then the mother of Makkah. Makkah was therefore not literally the real mother of Abijam, but rather the word mother is used by means of figure of speech for a female ancestor. She was in reality the grandmother of Abijam, but she is mentioned here in the record about being Abhi Jam's reign because of her position, influence in the royal court, blah, blah, blah. Something I also find kind of interesting is he makes the note, and I'm not sure how much relevance this really has. I'm not really sure it means much. But he claims that, and you can correct me on this, he claims that Makkah can be translated as suppression. And Micaiah means who is like Jehovah. And he says that Makkah, it's the same, he thinks it could be referring to the same person, and that Makkah is used with her connection to idolatry, because it says in 2 Chronicles 15:16 that she, that Asa, the king, removed her from being queen because she made an idol in the grove, and Asa cut down her idol and stamped it and burned it in the book at Kidron. So he seems to think that it's just, these are just distinctions, you know, one is referring to her state as queen, Micaiah, which is an honorable name, and then Makkah, which means suppression, to sort of, I don't know, I guess, demonize her or to demote, I don't know what the word is, but basically make reference to her pitiful state when she made an idol. So basically, I think that, like, the main thing that needs to be discerned is, you know, is it talking about, is this, are Makkah and Micaiah two different people, or are they the same? I'll let you, I usually read Poole, but I know you were talking to me on Sunday about Poole, so I'll let you go into Poole, but I know Poole has some, he has some things to say about, you know, whether or not he thinks it's the same person or not.
Yeah.
And I'll let you go over that real quick.
Well, I mean, the first thing I would say, and this is beginning to sound very repetitive because we noted this in several of these discussions, is, first of all, once again,
the nincompoop principle that you're going to bring up.
The nincompoop principle. The dullard principle. That, you know, the persons who recognized that First Kings and Second Chronicles and the other books of the, what we call the Old Testament, or the Hebrew Bible, were in the inspired word of God, they did not see any contradiction in having these two accounts. They did not see this as a massive or embarrassing contradiction. So that's the first thing. Is there variety in the use of names in the Old Testament? Yes. I mean, and here it's shown in the difference between Abhi Jam in 1 Kings and Abijah in 2 Chronicles. Abhi Jam or Abiyam means my father of the sea. Abiyah has, you know, the Yahweh or Jehovah is my father, is the Lord. But apparently the son of Rehoboam who succeeded him as king was known by both of those names. And that's not unusual in the Old Testament setting. I mean, we know so many examples of people who had multiple names. And I think sometimes those names did sometimes reflect titles, or they might have reflected piety. I mean, think about just in the Old Testament narrative. Jacob becomes Israel. Jethro, the father-in-law of Moses, is also known as Hobab. Solomon is also known as Jedidiah. And on the female side, Sarah is also earlier in the Genesis narrative known as Sarai. So, you know, there's fluidity of names. So you already pointed that out. So if somebody says, well, it's Makkah in 1 Kings and it's Micaiah in 2 Chronicles, you know, it just means there's fluidity of names. And I think it is the same person. And as you pointed out, I mean, Micaiah, who is like Jehovah, and then Makkah, it comes from a verb that means to press or to squeeze. I don't know that that's necessarily anything about idolatry. I don't know that it's necessarily a name with negative connotation. But it's just not as clearly a name of piety like Micaiah is. But I was just looking, actually, and if you look at First or Second Chronicles, chapter, 11 and verse 21, she's called there Makkah.
Okay.
So. Makkah, the daughter of Absalom, and Rehoboam loved Makkah, the daughter of Absalom, above all his wives and concubines. So there is a place where she's called Makkah.
Right.
But so I don't think that's the objection. The objection probably is more along the lines, as you've already mentioned it, with the contrast between the title of the Skeptic's Annotated Bible question is who was Abijam's mother? And so I would say it was Makkah or Micaiah, but the question is then in First Kings, it says that she was the daughter of
Abishalom.
And Abishalom, meaning the word shalom, means peace. Abi is my father. Ab or Av is father, and the little I on the end is the first person personal pronoun, my. So Avi or Abi, my father, shalom. And actually that name, talking about fluidity of names, that is the same as the name Absalom, Absalom. Absalom, my father or father is peace. The son of David who
it's an ironic
rebelled
name for Absalom, isn't it?
Right. So and if you compare, like the previous verse that I mentioned, 2 Chronicles 11:21, Rehoboam loved Makkah, the daughter of Absalom, the daughter of Abishalom.
Right.
Right. So that's another argument for why this isn't a contradiction. But the question is, why in 2 Chronicles 13:2 is she described as Micaiah, the daughter of Uriel of Gibeah? And you know, you mentioned one possibility. One possibility is that it's using the Hebrew word bat. In the sense, not of daughter, but granddaughter. Mm-hmm. And so it's tracing her roots through her mother's side because on her father's side, her grandfather would have been David, but on her mother's side, to Uriel of Gibeah. And as you pointed out, the Hebrew noun bat, if you know in Jewish tradition, later Jewish tradition, there's up to this very day, there's the custom of the bar mitzvah for boys
the
when
bat
the boy
mitzvah
becomes
for girls.
That's right. He becomes a son of the covenant, and the bat mitzvah for girls. So bat is the word for daughter. She becomes a daughter of the covenant when she becomes a young woman. So but ordinarily the term bat means daughter and is translated as daughter. I don't have my pool actually open in front of me, but I did read it. And he suggests, you know, she might have been the daughter to one, meaning the daughter of Abishalom, and the granddaughter to another, which would be Uriel. Or he says she could have been the natural daughter to one and adopted by the other. So she could have been the natural daughter of Abishalom or Absalom, and then she could have been adopted by someone else named Uriel of Gibeah. Or the other possibility is that Uriel of Gibeah, which means something like, you know, God is light. That could have been a title, and it could have been an alternate name for Absalom. So the truth is, we don't know in the end. Another thing we've talked about a number of times is that the Bible is not Google. It's not the old pre-Google term would be the Encyclopedia Britannica. It doesn't tell us everything we might desire to know. It tells us everything we need to know, and it's the principle of the sufficiency of Scripture. So we know there was fluidity in the use of names. We know that the ancient Israelites were not stupid, and they knew contradictions as well as we do, and they saw no contradiction in having the First Kings account and the Second Chronicles account in the same body of authoritative literature, which they looked at as infallible, as we do. And personally, I think the most reasonable explanation is simply that Abi Shalom was also known as Uriel. That'd be my view. Really? It does raise one thing, one issue when I looked at this regarding translation, because every English translation I looked at, of Second Chronicles, uses the term daughter for Bat, except for the New King James Version. And let me look it up here real quick. At 1 Kings 15:1-2, the New King James Version says Makah, the granddaughter of Abi Shalom.
Really?
So it takes a different take on it. Let me just compare and see what the New King James Version has for 13:1-2 for it says daughter of Uriel. So the New King James Version, by way of its translation, is giving an interpretation that Makah or Micaiah was the daughter of Uriel, but the granddaughter of Abi Shalom.
It's funny you said that you think Uriel's a title.
A title or an alternate name.
I don't know. Doesn't it seem more likely that it would just be the granddaughter and daughter? Doesn't that seem like the more likely solution? I mean, not that that solution is wrong, but like, doesn't that seem like, you know, less likely? Or I guess not to you, huh?
Well, I just don't think it's possible. I would need to go back and look at it maybe a little more closely. I don't see anything to this point any other evidence that would necessarily rule that out as a possibility. I don't see any clear evidence that, you know, if there was some other place, some other passage within either 1 Kings or 2 Chronicles that mentioned, Uriel directly within the family line of Makah, then that would make it clear. But I don't see that. So, anyways, I mean, it's possible. Again, I would say given the fluidity of names, again, and given that the tradent who transmitted this, received it, that they didn't see any contradiction in it, I would lean back on the sufficiency of Scripture and say, you know, if it's something we don't know, it's not something we needed to know. And the main point, really, is that Abi Jam or Abi Jah succeeded Rehoboam at his death. And I think and that his mother was Makah or Micaiah, whoever her father or grandfather might have been. And the theological point, obviously, is God is actually keeping the promise that he had made to David. This is really the real point of why it's here in the Scriptures. God is keeping his promise to David that he would always have one of his descendants to sit upon the throne of Israel.
Right.
And so there's this civil war, the civil division between Israel in the north and Judah in the south. This narrative of the succession of Abijam to Rehoboam is actually very important, because if a descendant of David had not continued to sit on the throne, then that promise that God had made to David would have been threatened. And of course, from the Jewish perspective, all these years pass by, and you actually have in the north, their kings are not descendants of David. And so they're depicted in 1 and 2 Kings as having been more wicked. I mean, one of the things that is described is Rehoboam sets up alternative places of worship. He sets up golden calves at Dan and Bethel so that the Israelites won't go down to the temple in Jerusalem. He doesn't want them going down there, and he wants them identifying with their new nation. And so he essentially sets up an alternative religion. And so they have non-Davidites, and they become more and more religiously and spiritually degenerate. And they're the first to fall, destroyed by the Assyrians. And in the south, the southern kingdom survives longer. They have some wicked kings as well, but they also have a few decent kings, like Asa, and they continue to have till the very end, till 586 BC. They have descendants of David who are on the throne. Now it's a crisis that it seems like the promise fails, because when they're defeated by the Babylonians, they no longer have a king in right. Jerusalem. They no longer have a king sitting on the throne. Of course, from a Christian perspective, we see the promise was fulfilled in Jesus, who is a descendant of David, and his kingdom, you know, is not of this world, but he will reign forever and ever as King of Kings and Lord of Lords. So theologically, you know, the main point is a descendant of David succeeds Rehoboam. And within this line is also the seed of the Messiah, Jesus.
Right.
Now, the name of Abijam or Abijah's mother, having a variation in 1 Kings account versus the 2 Chronicles account. I'm not saying everything in Scripture is important, but it's not
the focal point here.
It's not the focal point, right?
Right. Yep.
So, anyways, that's my take. That's my take on it.
Right. Well, I mean, that's very, you know, that's par for the course. When most of the time, when it comes to critics, you know, of the word is to focus on the things that, you know, aren't important and make much, you know, of them. When in reality, it just ends up making them look worse more often than not.
Right.
So anyway, but yeah, but no, I mean, it's good to look at, you know, it's good to look at the more difficult ones and the easier ones. All, you know, they're all important too. You know, if somebody brings something, you know, before us that they see as a, you know, big problem, you know, whether we see it as big or not, it's good, I think, to, I don't want to use the word attack necessarily, but to defend more is probably the better term for to defend it. And, you know, make sure that, you know, we make a good, How does the passage go? We have a good defense.
First Peter, what is it? 1 Peter 3:15, that we be ready to give an answer.
Anyone
who asks for an account for the hope that is within us, something like that.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. It's 1 Peter 3:15. Be ready always to give an answer to every man that asketh you a reason of the hope that is in you with meekness and fear. Right. So,
yeah, that's the
difference. All right, brother. Yeah. I'm glad we could address another one tonight.
For sure. Yeah. I'm glad we got to do it. I'm glad that we, especially after the delay. So it's good. All right,
brother.
Appreciate it. And until next time.
Okay, brother. Blessings. Bye.